It is Saturday morning in CCO land when we have a bit of a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Jack Farrell. Good morning, Jack. Welcome to the month of June.
Indeed. And getting a rainy welcome.
Yes, it is. But we'll see some sunshine later on today. So that's the good news.
It's supposed to be nice in the afternoon. But
yes.
I decided we would talk today about one of the great varietals in the world that often gets overlooked, and that's the Sauvignon Blanc grape. Sauvignon Blanc produces a white wine that is well known the world over. It's amazing to me. Even the name is shrouded in mystery. It obviously stands for wild white. Sauvignon is undoubtedly a derivative of sauvage, a French word for wild. And Sauvignon Blanc is produced in almost all of the world's wine regions, but it has an interesting background, and it's an interesting wine. There's no other wine that, if you asked any wine person to describe it, there are three words that would surely pop up, and they are crisp, elegant, and fresh. And that's Sauvignon Blanc in a nutshell. It is a very crisp, elegant wine, and it has usually kind of in the nose a little bit of grass or green pepper, elegant wine, and In fact, that originally was a deleterious description when you said green peppers or grass, and that's why Robert Mondavi, when he found some very good Sauvignon Blanc in California back in the very late 60s, he couldn't sell it as Sauvignon Blanc because there was no traction for Sauvignon Blanc. It was an exotic grape type, they thought, and he called it Fumée Blanc, or the white smoke. And, of course, there is an area in the Loire Valley that makes Pouilly Fumée, which is 100% Sauvignon Blanc, and that also... Fumée, again, is French for smoke. But these crisp, elegant, fresh wines are absolutely delightful. Another thing that was a pioneer, really, is Sauvignon Blanc for the screw cap closure on wine bottles. New Zealand was a latecomer to the wine business for table wines. New Zealand always made fortified wines, ports and sherries, etc., but they didn't make much in the way of table wines. And back in the late 60s and early 70s, they began to discover that Sauvignon Blanc bloomed very, very well and did very, very well in New Zealand. And that isn't that long ago, 55, 56 years ago, where they started to produce Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand. And because New Zealand was A, inexpensive, and B, very good, that it developed traction all over the world and was really responsible for the rebirth of Sauvignon Blanc. It's always been around. Another wag has often said it came from Bordeaux, where it is the principal grape type for white Bordeaux. The other one is Semillon. There's two others that are permitted by law, but really the bulk of the white Bordeaux are Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. And whether you're buying Chateau Yquem, which is a sweet Sauternes, or you're looking for something like Chateau Carbonneau, which is a dry white Pessac or Grave. And, you know, I remember once, this is many, many years ago, we were having Chateau Carbonneau, and my friend said, "I like this wine. What would you eat with?" And I said, "It cries for lobster." Well, that became a very catchy thing where the wine cried for something. It was kind of fun for a couple of years fooling around with that. But the Sauvignon Blanc is really a young, wonderful wine. And as I said, it's in the Loire Valley. It comes from a district called Pouilly Fumée. And Sancerre, as many of you have heard me say in the past, Sancerre is really a Sauvignon Blanc with a college education. The Sauvignon Blancs that are produced in Sancerre are a little more complex than Sauvignon Blancs that are produced around the Riesling grape. It was never received a lot of credit, as the same as with Semillon. It was another blending grape, and they blend them together. The Bordelais do that with their red wines, too. You know, regular Bordeaux is a mixture of Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot, usually, with a little Cabernet Franc very often added to the mixture. And anyhow, it was after the phylloxera epidemic, which was a huge milestone in the wine world. Phylloxera is a root louse that attacked the root system of grapes and was decimating the vineyards of the world. Well, it happens to come from the United States, and so the United States would have to come to the rescue and send the cure around, and they did that by grafting all of the native rootstock onto American rootstock, and by doing that, gave the grapevine immunity that it didn't have before, and the grapevines flourished. And when that happened, everybody took a hard look at what they were growing and how they were doing it, etc. This is at the turn of the last century. And by the 20s and 30s, the phylloxera had been eliminated, and people were now concentrating on the style of making wine. And it's amazing, if you drink wine throughout your life, you'll see that, you know, there's so many different kinds of Chardonnays, and anybody who drinks a lot of Chardonnay will tell you that. There's so many different kinds of Cabernets. It goes without saying that wines grown in different soil by different winemakers, etc., are going to come out quite differently. In fact, it's amazing to me how different they can be, almost to the point sometimes of not even recognizing the grape type. It's so different. But usually there is a family-like resemblance, and that's true of Sauvignon Blanc. As I said, when it went off to New Zealand, it kind of got so popular that the Kiwis from New Zealand, by popularizing Sauvignon Blanc, really were responsible for it becoming popular in other countries. Just like here in the United States, we always had Sauvignon Blanc, but as I said, it had a bad reputation. And thus Mondavi christened his Fumé Blanc, and it began to get a better reputation because of Bob Mondavi and what he was doing. But it wasn't until really the late 80s, early 90s, when New Zealand began to send their Sauvignon Blanc forth and convince the rest of the world that this is indeed a wonderful wine worth trying. And it's interesting to me that for many, many years, Chablis was the wine of Paris bistros. Well, of course, Chablis got very expensive. Today, Paris bistros feature Sauvignon Blanc, and they feature it not from the Loire Valley and not from Bordeaux, but from the Languedoc, which is a huge area in the central part of France that produces tons and tons of wine, some of it quite good, and inexpensive. And, of course, bistro owners love the fact that it's inexpensive and it's drinkable, and it's very good to have as an aperitif type of thing. When the grape type Sauvignon Blanc was introduced to New Zealand, just imagine, that was in the early 70s. So we're really caught hold and people started to make it. And as I mentioned, that they were also responsible for the screw top. They had problems with cork, getting cork properly in New Zealand, and they decided they'd go with these screw caps. And they were, for a long, long time, I can remember talking to Charlie Boone in the morning, they were so controversial when they first came out. And today, I don't think there's any controversy at all. People love screw tops. Some people prefer them because they're easier. Certainly, if you're going somewhere and you've forgotten a screw, a wine corkscrew, and you have a Stelvin top, you just unscrew it, it makes it all worthwhile. But the wines themselves were stellar from New Zealand. So, and as I say, by popularizing that new screw cap opener, today very, very many wines throughout the world are using screw caps, and they use them unashamedly, and they're glad to do it. And I think it's a perfect opening or way to open or seal a bottle of wine in the, say, relatively inexpensive category. And by that, I mean up to $25. I think over $25, $30, the screw cap is deleterious. I remember once when I was a partner in a winery in Chianti, we bottled some wines with corks and we bottled some wines with screw caps, and we opened them up about every 6 months. I think we had bottled a case or two of each. And so it had stretched over about a 4 or 5 year period, and the wines in screw cap tasted exactly the same as the day they were bottled, fresh, ripe, lovely. The ones that were in the cork finish developed aging. And, you know, when you make a good red wine, you want it to age. And the ones in the screw cap just didn't age like the ones with the cork did. You know, believe it or not, that cork breathes a little. It's hard to imagine when you look at a cork from a wine bottle that you could get anything through that. Certainly you can't get any liquid through it, but a little bit of air manages to seep in through that porous cork, and thus the wines can age better. When it comes to Sauvignon Blanc, you want kind of a cooler climate. They don't do well in hot climates. In fact, Sauvignon Blanc ripens very early and blossoms kind of late. So it blooms quite early and ripens kind of late. So it can hang on the vine for a while, and really does. In fact, it's interesting how in Bordeaux, I remember early on when I first got into this business, and they show you a white wine vineyard, about every 10th row would be Sauvignon Blanc. And they've now discovered it's just better when it's done by itself, because usually most of the vineyards in White Bordeaux were a minimum of 10% of Sauvignon Blanc. And as I say, France is really the birthplace of Sauvignon Blanc. You can get arguments from the Bordelais that they were the original ones. You'll also get arguments from people in the Loire Valley that they were the original. But that's not a very moot point, who cares? But with the fact that the Kiwis from New Zealand made this grape type so popular, Australia jumped right in. And as I said, so did France by opening up that vast Midi area where they'd sell inexpensive Sauvignon Blanc that are really quite good. And today in New Zealand, you can really break your pick on spending a lot of money on a Sauvignon Blanc. Probably one of the best wines there is something called Silver Beach. It's not too expensive. I think it's under $12 or $15 a bottle. And Silver Beach is a marvelous New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc that would be worth seeking out. And the rest of our country, of course, is nowadays Sauvignon Blanc is made all over California, some as expensive as $150 a bottle. And they're really quite interesting. But you can tame that aggressiveness of the Sauvignon Blanc grape with barrel aging. And also that grassy aroma can be also tamed a little bit. In fact, that's what Bob Mondavi believed when he found that real good batch of Sauvignon Blanc. But the winemaking skills are what really shine when they make a good Sauvignon Blanc. And yes, I still believe it cries for lobster if given the right one, like Chateau Carbonneau. But don't forget, it goes so well with so many other things. Try having a Sauvignon Blanc with some sushi or any Thai food. As a matter of fact, almost any Pan-Asian food is absolutely terrific when paired with Sauvignon Blanc. It can be combined with a lot of different dishes because it's a real approachable wine. If you're looking for light meat, it's very good with chicken or turkey. And as I said, you can't beat it with seafood, particularly with lobster. As I said so many years ago, it cries for lobster. Today, I say it again, Sauvignon Blanc cries for lobster. But don't forget, it also goes very well with shrimp and any other seafood you might have. And it's a good pairing with really spicy food, ergo Pan-Asian and Thai food. And incidentally, with Father's Day coming up in 2 weeks, our very first Haskell's Riverboat Cruise starts. These cruises are 3 hours. They're on the beautiful St. Croix. They start at noon and go till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The wonderful lunch is prepared. They usually have about 250 wines, beers, and spirits for you to choose from. And it's a delightful way to spend 3 hours. It would make a great Father's Day present. Just one of the Haskell's Bacchus wine tours. You can go to the Haskell's website and pick that right up.
Excellent. And let's tell some locations, Jack, before we scoot out of here.
All right. Haskell's has many locations, all of which can sell you wine at very, very reasonable prices. And best of all, they'll help you pick a wine that'll go with whatever you're pairing your food with. There's a Haskell's in Bloomington, Excelsior, Faribault, Haskell's in Maple Grove, 22,000 square feet of vineyards of the world. In Minneapolis, we have free parking Saturday and Sunday. There's a Haskell's, 1,000 square feet of vineyards of the world. In Minneapolis, we have free parking Saturday and Sunday. There's a Haskell's in Plymouth, St. Paul, another one in Stillwater, White Bear Lake, and Woodbury. And don't forget, the store in Plymouth has been redone. It's a nice place to visit in Plymouth.
All right, excellent, Jack. Well, let's join up next week.
Denny, I'm going to look forward to that.
That's Jack Farrell from Haskell's. It is Saturday morning in CCO land when we have a bit of a wine chat with our friend from Haskell's, Jack Farrell. Good morning, Jack. Welcome to the month of June.
Indeed, and getting a rainy welcome.
Yes, it is, but we'll see some sunshine later on today, so that's the good news.
It's supposed to be nice in the afternoon, but
yes.
I decided we would talk today about one of the great varietals in the world that often gets overlooked, and that's the Sauvignon Blanc grape. Sauvignon Blanc produces a white wine that is well-known the world over. It's amazing to me. Even the name is shrouded in mystery. It obviously stands for wild white. Sauvignon is undoubtedly a derivative of sauvage, a French word for wild. And Sauvignon Blanc is produced in almost all of the world's wine regions, but it has an interesting background, and it's an interesting wine. There's no other wine that, if you asked any wine person to describe it, there are three words that would surely pop up, and they are crisp, elegant, and fresh. And that's Sauvignon Blanc in a nutshell. It is a very crisp, elegant wine, and it has usually a kind of in the nose a little bit of grass or green pepper, elegant wine, and In fact, that originally was a deleterious description when you said green peppers or grass. And that's why Robert Mondavi, when he found some very good Sauvignon Blanc in California back in the very late 60s, he couldn't sell it as Sauvignon Blanc because there was no traction for Sauvignon Blanc. It was an exotic grape type, they thought. And he called it Fumée Blanc, or the white smoke. And, of course, there is an area in the Loire Valley that makes Pouilly Fumée, which is 100% Sauvignon Blanc. And that also, Fumée, again, is French for smoke. But these crisp, elegant, fresh wines are absolutely delightful. Another thing that was a pioneer, really, is Sauvignon Blanc, for the screw cap closure on wine bottles. New Zealand was a latecomer to the wine business for table wines. New Zealand always made fortified wines, ports and sherries, etc., but they didn't make much in the way of table wines. And back in the late 60s and early 70s, they began to discover that Sauvignon Blanc bloomed very, very well and did very, very well in New Zealand. And that isn't that long ago, 55, 56 years ago, where they started to produce Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand. And because New Zealand was A, inexpensive, and B, very good, that it developed traction all over the world and was really responsible for the rebirth of Sauvignon Blanc. It's always been around. Another wag has often said it came from Bordeaux, where it is the principal grape type for white Bordeaux. The other one is Semillon. There's two others that are permitted by law, but really the bulk of the white Bordeaux are Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. And whether you're buying Chateau Yquem, which is a sweet Sauternes, or you're looking for something like Chateau Carbonneau, which is a dry white Pessac or Grave. And, you know, I remember once, this is many, many years ago, we were having Chateau Carbonneau, and my friend said, "I like this wine, what would you eat it with?" And I said, "It cries for lobster." Well, that became a very catchy thing where the wine cried for something. It was kind of fun for a couple of years fooling around with that. But the Sauvignon Blanc is really a young, wonderful wine. And as I said, it's in the Loire Valley. It comes from a district called Puy-Fumet. And Sancerre, as many of you have heard me say in the past, Sancerre is really a Sauvignon Blanc with a college education. The Sauvignon Blancs that are produced in Sancerre are a little more complex than Sauvignon Blancs that are produced around the world. The Bordelais did a lot to popularize Sauvignon Blanc, but because it was a blending grape, it never received a lot of credit, as the same as with Semillon. It was another blending grape, and they blend them together. The Bordelais do that with their red wines, too. You know, regular Bordeaux is a mixture of Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot, usually, with a little Cabernet Franc very often added to the mixture. And anyhow, it was after the phylloxera epidemic, which was a huge milestone in the wine world. Phylloxera is a root louse that attacked the root system of grapes and was decimating the vineyards of the world. Well, it happens to come from the United States, and so the United States would have to come to the rescue and send the cure around, and they did that by grafting all of the native rootstock onto American rootstock, and by doing that, gave the grapevine immunity that it didn't have before, and the grapevines flourished. And when that happened, everybody took a hard look at what they were growing and how they were doing it, etc. This is at the turn of the last century. And by the 20s and 30s, the phylloxera had been eliminated, and people were now concentrating on the style of making wine. And it's amazing. As you drink wine throughout your life, you'll see that, you know, there's so many different kinds of Chardonnays, and anybody who drinks a lot of Chardonnay will tell you that. There's so many different kinds of Cabernets. It goes without saying that wines grown in different soil by different winemakers, etc., are going to come out quite differently. In fact, it's amazing to me how different they can be, almost to the point sometimes of not even recognizing the grape type. It's so different. But usually there is a family-like resemblance, and that's true of Sauvignon Blanc. As I said, when it went off to New Zealand, it kind of got so popular that the Kiwis from New Zealand, by popularizing Sauvignon Blanc, really were responsible for it becoming popular in other countries, just like here in the United States. We always had Sauvignon Blanc, but as I said, it had a bad reputation, and thus Mondavi christened his Fumé Blanc, and it began to get a better reputation because of Bob Mondavi and what he was doing. But it wasn't until really the late 80s, early 90s, when New Zealand began to send their Sauvignon Blanc forth and convince the rest of the world that this is indeed a wonderful wine worth trying. And it's interesting to me that for many, many years, Chablis was the wine of Paris bistros. Well, of course, Chablis got very expensive. Today, Paris bistros feature Sauvignon Blanc, and they feature it not from the Loire Valley and not from Bordeaux, but from the Languedoc, which is a huge area in the central part of France that produces tons and tons of wine, some of it quite good and inexpensive. And, of course, bistro owners love the fact that it's inexpensive and it's drinkable, and it's very good to have as an aperitif type of thing. When the grape type Sauvignon Blanc was introduced to New Zealand, just imagine, that was in the early 70s. So we're really caught hold and people started to make it. And as I mentioned, that they were also responsible for the screw top. They had problems with cork, getting cork properly in New Zealand, and they decided they'd go with these screw caps. And they were, for a long, long time, I can remember talking to Charlie Boone in the morning, they were so controversial when they first came out. And today, I don't think there's any controversy at all. People love screw tops. Some people prefer them because they're easier. Certainly, if you're going somewhere and you've forgotten a screw, a wine corkscrew, and you have a Stelvin top, you just unscrew it, it makes it all worthwhile. But the wines themselves were stellar from New Zealand. So, and as I say, by popularizing that new screw cap opener, today very, very many wines throughout the world are using screw caps, and they use them unashamedly and are glad to do it. And I think it's a perfect opening or way to open or seal a bottle of wine in the, say, relatively inexpensive category. And by that I mean up to $25. I think over $25, $30, a screw cap is deleterious. I remember once when I was a partner in a winery in Chianti, we bottled some wines with corks and we bottled some wines with screw caps. And we opened them up about every 6 months. I think we had bottled a case or two of each. And so it had stretched over about a 4 or 5 year period, and the wines in screw cap tasted exactly the same as the day they were bottled, fresh, ripe, lovely. The ones that were in the cork finish developed aging. And, you know, when you make a good red wine, you want it to age. And the ones in the screw cap just didn't age like the ones with the cork did. You know, believe it or not, that cork breathes a little. It's hard to imagine when you look at a cork from a wine bottle that you could get anything through that. Certainly you can't get any liquid through it, but a little bit of air manages to seep in through that porous cork, and thus the wines can age better. When it comes to Sauvignon Blanc, you want kind of a cooler climate. They don't do well in hot climates. In fact, Sauvignon Blanc ripens very early and blossoms kind of late. So it blooms quite early and ripens kind of late. So it can hang on the vine for a while, and really does. In fact, it's interesting how in Bordeaux, I remember early on when I first got into this business, and they show you a white wine vineyard, about every 10th row would be Sauvignon Blanc. And they've now discovered it's just better when it's done by itself, because usually most of the vineyards in White Bordeaux were a minimum of 10% of Sauvignon Blanc. And as I say, France is really the birthplace of Sauvignon Blanc. You can get arguments from the Bordelais that they were the original ones. You'll also get arguments from people in the Loire Valley that they were the original. But that's not a very moot point, who cares? But with the fact that the Kiwis from New Zealand made this grape type so popular, Australia jumped right in. And as I said, so did France by opening up that vast Midi area where they'd sell inexpensive Sauvignon Blanc that are really quite good. And today in New Zealand, you can really break your pick on spending a lot of money on a Sauvignon Blanc. Probably one of the best wines there is something called Silver Beach. It's not too expensive. I think it's under $12 or $15 a bottle. And Silver Beach is a marvelous New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc that would be worth seeking out. And the rest of our country, of course, is nowadays Sauvignon Blanc is made all over California, some as expensive as $150 a bottle. And they're really quite interesting. But you can tame that aggressiveness of the Sauvignon Blanc grape with barrel aging. And also that grassy aroma can be also tamed a little bit. In fact, that's what Bob Mondavi believed when he found that real good batch of Sauvignon Blanc. But the winemaking skills are what really shine when they make a good Sauvignon Blanc. And yes, I still believe it cries for lobster if given the right one, like Chateau Carbonneau. But don't forget, it goes so well with so many other things. Try having a Sauvignon Blanc with some sushi or any Thai food. As a matter of fact, almost any Pan-Asian food is absolutely terrific when paired with Sauvignon Blanc. It can be combined with a lot of different dishes because it's a real approachable wine. If you're looking for light meat, it's very good with chicken or turkey. And as I said, you can't beat it with seafood, particularly with lobster. As I said so many years ago, it cries for lobster. Today, I say it again, Sauvignon Blanc cries for lobster. But don't forget, it also goes very well with shrimp and any other seafood you might have. And it's a good pairing with really spicy food, ergo Pan-Asian and Thai food. And incidentally, with Father's Day coming up in 2 weeks, our very first Haskell's Riverboat cruise starts. These cruises are 3 hours. They're on the beautiful St. Croix. They start at noon and go till 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The wonderful lunch is prepared. They usually have about 250 wines, beers, and spirits for you to choose from. And it's a delightful way to spend 3 hours. It would make a great Father's Day present. Just one of the Haskell's Bacchus wine tours. You can go to the Haskell's website and pick that right up.
Excellent. And let's tell some locations, Jack, before we scoot out of here.
All right. Haskell's has many locations, all of which can sell you wine at very, very reasonable prices. And best of all, they'll help you pick a wine that'll go with whatever you're pairing your food with. There's a Haskell's in Bloomington, Excelsior, Faribault, Haskell's in Maple Grove, 22,000 square feet of vineyards of the world. In Minneapolis, we have free parking Saturday and Sunday. There's a Haskell's, 1,000 square feet of vineyards of the world. In Minneapolis, we have free parking Saturday and Sunday. There's a Haskell's in Plymouth, St. Paul, another one in Stillwater, White Bear Lake, and Woodbury. And don't forget, the store in Plymouth has been redone. It's a nice place to visit in Plymouth.
All right, excellent, Jack. Well, let's join up next week.
Denny, I'm going to look forward to that.
That's Jack Farrell from Haskell's.